recently passed Student Success Act, which establishes a corporate activity tax to fund K-12 education. Let's listen. To get started, last time you spoke with the KBOO News was back in January, when the Secretary of State race and Oregon more generally was very different. Since the onset of COVID-19, has your approach to the race or your policy ideas, changed at all?
Well, the policy goals are still the same. I still have a 90-day agenda of things we have to do to overhaul the Secretary of State's office and add some innovations. I think if there's one thing on that list that has changed, it is that my first order of business had been the Student Success Act, because it was so complex. And I would make my first audit instead of that, and that's still being an important one, but the first one has to be on the state's level of preparedness in an emergency, because we've seen what this pandemic can do to shake all of our state government institutions and their preparedness and their computer systems and their communication systems. And I'm particularly disturbed at the rickety old computers in the employment division. I've been spending most of my time in my current job as a state senator and just helping people get through and get their claims processed. Almost 400,000 Oregonians now are out of work, and now they have to sit on hold for 2 hours and still not be able to make their claim. And so I want to find out what happened there, in particular, how it is that the state received federal money to upgrade systems 10 years ago, and we still have what we have.
Right. We'll talk a little bit more about audits later, but the Secretary of State wears a lot of hats in Oregon government, including obviously the audits division, but managing elections is often the first that comes to mind for people. What do you see as the biggest threat to our electoral security at the moment?
Well, the biggest threat is the database that holds 2.8 million registered voters. Right now, that database is in compliance with federal law in terms of its firewalls and protection. But the technology experts that I've been working with and the people on my team say that is nowhere near as secure as it should be. And I don't want our elections system tested in an emergency like those employment division computers were. I want to make sure that we have a system where voters and their registrations are protected. If someone comes in and knocks out 5,000 people from registered voters, then they don't get their ballots, and you can see very quickly how this will interfere with our elections. What if we can't certify a state election because 5,000 people didn't get a ballot, and you know we were voting for a governor or a U.S. senator? I'm not going to allow that to happen on my watch. Frankly, I'm surprised that it's gotten to the point of where it is now. And so that is absolutely job one, is to shore up the technology for our database of registered voters.
So you've proposed a few different electoral innovations, including opening primaries up to unaffiliated voters and also day of voter registration. But perhaps the most radical proposal is ranked choice voting. Can you walk us through that?
Certainly. Ranked choice voting, at least I've concluded, and I think others, gives, I think, communities a better representative candidate in the end than their current winner-take-all system. And really what it is just what it sounds like. You rank your choices in terms of your preference. So if you have three or four candidates out there, you say, here's my first choice, here's my second choice, here's my third choice. And those are all tabulated until someone, the bottom person gets, the bottom candidate gets tossed out. And then that candidate's choices go to the others until finally somebody gets 50%. And I think the thing that got me most interested in this is it creates a huge disincentive for negative campaigning. And if you think about it, it makes sense. You don't want to sling mud on your opponent, because now you want your opponent's second place votes. So not only are you going to run a positive campaign, you're going to reach out beyond your base and try to get everybody's vote. And at least that's been the experience in states and local jurisdictions that have tried it. It minimizes negative campaigns. And we'll see what happens right here in Oregon, because Benton County voters passed it a few years ago. And this year will be their first year that they hold their local elections under ranked choice voting. I, as Secretary of State, would like to kind of take it out for a test drive with Oregon voters, give counties the authority to do this. And like vote by mail a generation ago, take it for a test drive and see if we like it. And you know, maybe go statewide, maybe not. But I think it's an excellent experiment for us to explore to see if this results in more true elections.
Yeah, so you would want to implement it. You would want to allow counties the option to use a ranked choice ballot. Is that how you would implement it?
Yes, exactly. You know, I was a journalist when, in the 90s, when vote by mail was being tried. Local counties and cities were trying it out, and not everybody was on board. There was a lot of skepticism. Well, the post office will lose the mail. What if somebody sends in 10 ballots? And of course, you know, as we held these local elections, none of those things happened. And it went statewide in the year 2000, and it is now arguably one of the most popular programs in state government. And it's interesting to me to hear some of that same skepticism in other states now as they look at vote by mail. And I'm hoping that we can be kind of an ambassador to bring vote by mail to all states.
Yeah, that's definitely in the public conscious right now because of the restrictions that coronavirus has put on us.
Right. Right.
So for ranked choice voting, how would it change electoral outcomes? Would it mean that third parties have a better chance in Oregon?
No, it wouldn't mean that at all. It would just mean that I guess it would mean that third parties wouldn't be a spoiler. It would mean third parties have a decent chance as well as anyone else. It just depends on who the candidate is and how popular they are. Sometimes we see elections where you're voting for the lesser of two evils. You've heard that expression a lot. And that would not happen under ranked choice voting. And you would not have a third party come in and knock out the leading contender. I mean, if you think of that Al Gore presidential campaign 20 years ago where Ralph Nader came in and knocked out Al Gore and Bush won by that margin, you wouldn't have that dynamic anymore. So I think that's a much healthier way to elect candidates.
Very cool. Well, outside the current coronavirus crisis, much focus and emphasis has been placed on addressing climate change. And then in the legislature twice now, cap and trade regulations have failed to pass. What can the Secretary of State do to take action on climate change?
Well, the first thing I would do is, as the auditor of public accounts, which is how it's worded in the Constitution, I would make sure that climate change is part of every single audit. The audits division, I think, is in the best position to assess statewide coordination. And so I would task auditors with evaluating how agencies can more effectively work together to address climate change. So in every audit, there would be, you know, like three or four questions. Are agencies evaluating the effects of climate change on their services? Are they developing mitigation strategies? Are they reducing the effects of their own operations on carbon emissions, including their contractors? And most importantly, are the agencies collaborating, you know, on a statewide level to effectively consolidate strategic priorities around climate change? And so this would be on every single audit, whether it's a small or large agency. You know, how many of your employees are driving to work? How many are not? And all of those questions. And this would be incorporated into every single state audit. That's the most effective thing the Secretary of State can do for climate change.
Yeah, I'm curious about once the audit, like, reveals that information, where does that go? What does that do?
Well, it's included in the findings of the audits. There is an audits committee in the legislature that goes through these things and acts or doesn't act, depending on the severity of the findings or the criticism. And then it's up to our legislative branch and our executive branch to take audit. The Secretary of State does not have the authority to say, oh, we found a problem, and I'm going to fix it. The Secretary of State does not have that authority. But I, as Mark Hass, have the ability and the communication know-how to make sure that if there's a problem, everybody's going to know about it. And my my effect in the legislature in the last 19 years has been to affect change. And I think that's where some of my skill sets will come into play, is making sure we get some action on these audits, because one of the criticisms in previous Secretary of State office holders have been that, yes, an audit is done and it goes and sits on the shelf. That won't happen with me.
In a race for such a multifaceted position like the Secretary of State, what do you think are like the most important things for voters to keep in mind when making their decision?
Well, I think now, in the time that we're in, we want leaders who have been tested in tough times. And I was in the legislature during that recession in 2002. I was there in the Great Recession of 2008, and I was tested. And there are a lot of painful decisions that are going to have to be made in the next couple of years in state government. And I made those decisions as a legislator. You have to be diligent and make judicious decisions, but you also have to know how to look for some opportunities. For example, I passed the Oregon Promise, which is free community college for high school graduates in Oregon. And that whole concept was born out of the last recession. And that's an example of an opportunity. That recession decimated college savings plans for lots of families, and their kids needed to get on with life in a community school training or the first couple of years out of the way for a four-year degree. And so I think that's an example of an opportunity that can come out of something like this. And I think there are opportunities ahead, while there will be difficult decisions as well.
Have you found in the race that there are issues that you think don't get quite enough attention?
Oh, I'm a policy guy. I wish they all got more attention. I think this security and technology issue on our elections is really paramount, and it's not a bumper sticker issue. It's not a glamorous issue. You really have to sit down and talk to technology people and do some crisis planning, and you have to look out 5 years ahead and say, here's the ultimate goal here. And I think that is really the most important job for the person whose job it is to oversee elections in this state. I don't want a breakdown like we just saw in the employment department to happen in our elections. And I think it's paramount for the Secretary of State to get on this. And I'm surprised this work isn't being done now, but if you think about it, we've had four secretaries of state in just the last 5 years, just, you know, through fill-ins and deaths and appointments, and nothing negative about those people who have been in there, but nobody has had that long-term vision or the energy that I would embrace as Secretary of State.
Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
I just think that this is a place where independence is important, and throughout my legislative career and my years as a journalist before that, I've proven that I have the independence to do this job. I have the integrity to do it right.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for speaking with KABU today.
You bet you. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Oregon State Senator Mark Haass, who is running for Oregon Secretary of State. More information on Haass and his candidacy is available online at markhaass.com. Next, we will be speaking with Jamie McLeod Skinner, another candidate in the Secretary of State Democratic primary. McLeod Skinner rose to prominence in 2018 when she challenged Republican Representative Greg Walden in the race for Oregon's 2nd Congressional District. She lost, though she came closer than any Democratic challenger before her. She currently holds both an elected and an appointed office in Oregon. She is an elected board member of the Jefferson County Education Service District and was also appointed by Governor Kate Brown as a board member at large for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which provides grants to restore and protect watersheds and habitats. So last time you spoke to KABU News was back in January, when the Secretary of State race and, you know, Oregon more generally was very different. Since the onset of COVID-19, has your approach to the race or your policy priorities changed at all?
Yes and no. The priorities and making sure voices are heard and making sure there's two-way communication with Oregonians across our state that remains the same, because that's critically important. And that's why actually I'm running for Secretary of State. When I talk about protecting our democracy and ensuring accountable government, safeguarding our natural resources and helping rebuild our economy and communities after COVID-19, that all remains true. The approach has changed. And so the approach we've shifted to is live streams. And actually, we're the only campaign that is having these two-way communications that are open to the public, inviting questions from the public and responding, but also facilitating and hosting conversations with those voices who are not being heard right now. So whether it's folks from traditionally underrepresented communities, the Latinx community and farm workers and tribal communities and communities of color, and conversation on houselessness. Those are the conversations we need to be having, because government is not currently accountable to all Oregonians, and that's something I want to change.
So the Secretary of State wears a lot of hats in Oregon government. It's different from other states in that way, but managing elections is oftentimes what comes to mind for people when they think of the Secretary of State. What do you see as the biggest threat to our election security right now?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the fact that you recognize you're talking about all these different roles, because it's important to have experience in all the different roles, and you don't have the luxury of just prioritizing one thing. And that's why having executive management experience is so critically important, having experience managing staff and teams and budgets and many different priorities. So I really appreciate you pointing out that point. Specific to our elections, there's two things that are important. There's the election security and election integrity. The election security, part of that is, of course, cybersecurity and making sure our ballots are counted. We did a live stream just today on making sure people knew how to get their ballots in on time. Election integrity means making sure all voices are heard and we're bringing people into the process. It's making sure we're doing better outreach to communities that do not have as high a voter turnout right now. And I've got plans for all of that I've got on my website, jamiefororegon.com. But a huge piece of election security and integrity is the money in campaigns right now. And Oregon is one of the worst states in the country in terms of the money that can be dumped into races. And this is a big issue in the Secretary of State's race. And so we're seeing all sorts of money being dumped in. The newspapers have been covering the shadow pack that's been supporting one candidate and calling out and criticizing myself and another candidate. And if you support a candidate, that's fine, but have at least don't hide behind an ambiguous name and be proud of who you're supporting. Stand behind it. Also as a candidate, someone's dangling money in your face, you should be able to call them out. The accountability piece is really important. So I'm the only one in this race who has never taken a corporate dime, and this is true since when I was first elected in 2004, never taken fossil fuel money, big pharma money. And that's a big deal here in Oregon, across our state, because our state's been devastated by the opioid crisis. So those have taken money from big pharma. It's shocking to me, actually. But also, the Oregonian had a great article on this just yesterday talking about how I've raised the most in donations under $100. So I'm essentially a people power campaign. When you look at the average donations to all three campaigns, mine's less than $200. One is more than $800, and one is more than $6,000. And that's average contribution. And so if you think about who people will be accountable to, it really is a matter of following the money. And if folks are curious about how to do some of this research, we have a live stream on that as well. That we did to show people how to use OreStar and find out where people's money is coming from and who essentially are we'll all be accountable to.
Yeah, I will clarify for the listeners that we spoke to Shamia Fagan yesterday about the political action committee that's supporting her, which is called Oregonians for Ballot Access, which has drawn some criticism for both its name and the ads that it's put up to seem as impartial as opposed to supporting one candidate.
What's also really interesting about that is we noticed this when it first came up. And of course, if you Google any of our names, any of the candidates in this race, they pay to have that ad pop up first. So it's a paid ad. And then also they've changed who is funding that. So they've switched around some of the different organizations. And so that, if there's an organization that wants to support Canada, again, just admit who you are and admit who you're supporting and be straightforward and transparent about it. The Secretary of State's job, if, of those many roles you mentioned, it's, you know, elections and audits and business registration and transparency of government records. And if you can't be transparent as a candidate, it really raises questions about your commitment to transparency in the role that is responsible for government transparency for our entire state.
So to pivot a little bit, one of the many duties that we've been discussing hasn't come up yet, but is sitting on the state land board. That's one of the things that the Secretary of State is tasked with. And you are actually a board member at large for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. What are your priorities for that state land board seat?
Well, thank you so much for mentioning this role, because this is one of the many roles that folks don't understand are part of this responsibility. And the state land board is three people: the governor, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer, and oversees our state lands, our state public lands, those that belong to all of us, and our waterways. It's a critically important role. My candidacy is also distinguished in that I'm the only candidate in this race who has been outspoken on not supporting the Jordan Cove pipeline, the LNG pipeline. And I want to be very clear that I'm absolutely committed to good-paying, living-wage jobs, but we can get those without destroying our environment. And in this case, we have there's a pipeline that will have a devastating impact on our climate, massive greenhouse gas emissions, will also disrupt along the pipeline route. Disrupt many tribal communities. Tribes have been out against this, and I think we need to respect our tribal communities and honor the treaty obligations we have and listen to them when there's concerns about these issues. We did a live stream on this as well. People can Google on either Facebook or on YouTube. And one of my speakers was actually the tribal chairman for the Klamath Tribes, who spoke specifically about the devastating impacts that this project will have on his community. This is a project that it's a private Canadian company. They couldn't get a pipeline through Canada. They couldn't get a pipeline through Washington State or California or even the northern part of our state. And so they're really doubling down on the southern part and the southern route. And I'm the only one who's been outspoken against it. And this is a huge issue for our state.
So the Secretary of State also heads the audit division, which you mentioned earlier. What is the importance of that role?
The bottom line is government accountability. So, this is something where I've got a lot of experience in both the nonprofit sector and the government sector, where I've served in executive management roles. I've overseen and been audited myself, but I've also served on an audit committee, so I've got a lot of experience in this area. It's how we ensure that government is being accountable to different communities. And so when I talk about audits, I talk about not just financial and performance audits, but also equity audits and sustainability audits, information security audits, and safety audits. So for example, on a safety audit, you know, once we've gotten through the COVID-19, we can look back and see if we responded well or not. But one of the most important parts of the audit process is this equity audit piece, and making sure that we're looking at how our taxpayer dollars are being spent to ensure that it's done fairly and equitably to all our communities, because that's not happening right now. There hasn't been that perspective and that lens on how communities are being impacted. So one example, my wife and I live in Central Oregon. I serve on the Jefferson County Education Service District Board. And our communities in Jefferson County, the demographics is about a third, a third, a third, a third tribal, a third Latinx, and a third Caucasian. And right now with distance learning, a lot of our kids, and especially kids in the Warm Springs tribe, are not getting access to education. That's an equity issue. And that's the kind of thing that can be daylighted and addressed and called out through the audit process.
And then once that information is revealed, it's for the legislature to deal with, would you say?
So the legislature allocates funds, and this is where, and some of these things we knew all along. This is no mystery, but it will be a formal report that goes forward. And so there hasn't been the commitment to focus on these areas before and allocate these resources. But yes, it will be brought to the attention of the legislature. Another thing that I've proposed doing, and this is, again, comes in from actually having experience with how government works, not just in talking about policy setting. But I've also proposed making changes to what are called KPMs, key performance measures, that is essentially the report card for state agencies. And and making changes. This would be, I would propose this to the legislature. They would need to adopt it, but it would essentially establish an annual report out every year for the state agencies to make sure they're addressing the issues that we identify through the audit process.
Gotcha. Well, as we've spoken to, it's a very multifaceted position. And so in a race for Secretary of State, what do you think are the most important things for voters to keep in mind when they're making their decision?
Who the Secretary of State will be accountable for. Is there a track record of actually getting stuff done? And I have served underrepresented communities my entire life, from refugee and immigrant communities. And it's something I honor because of my own lived experience, coming out of the closet at a very early age, as a young adult. And I've actually passed legislation that helped to protect the transgender community back before it was popular for others to talk about it. In my 2018 run for Congress in 20 of the 36 counties, I brought Oregonians together to solve problems. So we need to move beyond the divisiveness we're seeing right now in the legislature, have leadership that helps represent all Oregonians, brings communities together to solve problems. So that experience, that lifelong commitment to actually getting stuff done, and the support. I've got support from individuals and organizations statewide, from former Secretary of State Gene Atkins to veteran and former DPO Vice Chair Valdez Bravo, Portland Commissioner Amanda Fritz, who's really interested in good governance, ethical governance. I've got from tribal community members, Gresham City Councilors Eddie Morales and Mario Palmero, Senator Jeff Golden, Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer, Portland Public School Board member Michelle DePass, Pano, Rice's Sierra Club, Sunrise Movement. The environmental youth organizations have really stepped up and identified the leadership I'm proposing and providing for moving Oregonians together forward in the areas that we need to have a more equitable, fair, and responsive state to all Oregonians.
Have you found in the race that there are issues that don't get enough attention to your mind?
The campaign finance one is getting a lot of attention. That's important. The environmental one that you mentioned is important. I find it's often talking about the role, and you pointed out well that it's a very diverse role. There's also redistricting. So after, as of next year, when we redraw our political boundaries, that doing that job and being able to do it in a way that's fair to all Oregonians is going to be really important. I've got a process that I've laid out for that. But right now, I think Oregonians and really Americans in general want leadership that is responsive to our needs, that gets us beyond this fighting match, that brings people together instead of being divisive. And that's part of this role. I mean, the Secretary of State's role is so critically important because the responsibility is essentially to make democracy work.
Well said. Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners today?
So my name is Jamie McLeod Skinner. I'm running to be your Secretary of State. I would be honored to have your vote. If you want more info, check out my website at jamiefororegon.com. Please remember that your ballot must be received by Tuesday at 8 p.m. And in most places, it's too late to put it in the mailbox, so you'll need to drop it off at a designated ballot drop box. And then also, let's stick together. We're all in a challenging time right now with COVID-19, but let's work together. We'll pull through this together, and we'll be okay. But right now, we're setting the state for setting the stakes through this election on who our future leaders will be. And I would be honored to have your vote for Secretary of State.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for speaking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, and take care, and thanks, KBOO, for all you're doing for our community.
We've been speaking with Jamie McLeod Skinner, a candidate in the Democratic primary for Secretary of State. More information on McLeod Skinner and her campaign is available online at jamiefororegon.com. Primary ballots are due by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 19th. It is recommended that all those who haven't voted yet drop their ballots at a drop-off site. Find your closest drop box online at sos.oregon.gov/voting. And if you've missed any of our election coverage, don't worry. It's online at kboo.fm/election2020. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
A cat named Joe.